Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz, your host, with you here today, here for the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City, and certainly one day removed from the official close of Mardi Gras, friends. I hope everybody had a good Mardi Gras. I hope everybody out there had a blast, had a good time. I hope everybody is already on the mend. I know it's taken me some time to bounce back. You know, and I was generally pretty good, friends, this Mardi Gras. You know, we did the do. But went to bed pretty early every night, drank a lot of water, ate pretty well, got, you know, quality sleep, all that good stuff. Took a couple hiatuses there, and it's Thursday, 2 days after, and I'm still feeling it. I'm sure pretty much everybody is, so I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm just looking for empathy, so hopefully it's out there. We were talking a little bit here just before the show, Monique, who works here in the office, and we were talking about just that. You know, how was your Mardi Gras good? How was your Mardi Gras good? Tired, still coming around, still trying to make it work. And then she reminded me, well, you know, we got St. Patrick's Day coming up. And if you're listening to the podcast, if you're not in the New Orleans area, or, you know, if you're not listening to the show, however you're listening, but if you're not in the New Orleans area, once again, you know, St. Patrick's Day is a big deal here. We got two or three parades and marching groups that come through town. Lots of fun, lots of partying, all that kind of stuff. So there is no rest for the wicked. And basically, when Mardi Gras ends, friends, as we know here, again, this is for those who are not familiar, right when Mardi Gras ends, which it does after Tuesday, and, you know, starts on a Wednesday, the end of Mardi Gras, of course, we are right into festival season. So there really is no rest for the wicked. We just move right on. Got French Quarter Festival coming up the second weekend in April. We got Jazz Fest coming up the last week of April, beginning of May, and all kinds of other good stuff, you know, going on. So it just continues to go. So stay hydrated, friends. Wear sunscreen and stay hydrated. This is that time of year. Got a good show for you today, which I'm really, really excited about. Speaking of festival season, my first guest is going to be Tracy Napolitano, who is the director of the inaugural, which will be the annual, but this is the inaugural. Here we go, first year of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, which should be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about the festival, how you can get involved and attend. It is March 24th, 25th, and 26th that weekend. We'll get into all that stuff. There's going to be some really cool things. There's tastings, there's music, there's actually seminars on Saturday. On that Saturday, the 25th. So that should be really a lot of fun. Great way to start to get into the mood for festival season. So we'll do that. And in the second hour of the show, I will be joined by Mark Shetler and Molly Bird from the New Orleans chapter of the United States Bartenders Guild. And one of the things that we're going to talk about, I mentioned this 2 weeks ago when we were starting off on the show or taking a break from the show, which we did last week for Mardi Gras, is we're going to talk a little bit about sexual assault as is connected to the cocktail industry, alcohol industry, these sorts of things. It's a very serious subject, of course, as you know, and you can imagine anywhere. But I think there's several things that maybe go on here that that make these industries or these situations somewhat unique. And we're going to talk a little bit about the problem, the issues, some of the phenomena here. And then we're going to talk about some of the things that are going on, strategies to prevent this. And part of this, too, is there is really the industry taking responsibility, as any employer should, for sexual assault in the workplace. What can be done? Now, of course, we're talking about bars and good times and escapism and alcohol and all this kind of stuff. So that maybe makes things a little trickier. Is probably a fair way to put it, but we're going to talk a little bit about what can be done about it and then what some of the activities that folks in the hospitality industry here in New Orleans are undertaking to basically provide training, support, awareness, some of these important issues. So it's a really important show, folks, and I hope you do listen to this because those of us who are, if you're listening to this show, I'm sure you like to go out to bars, and this is a place where it's rife with predation and sexual predators who are out to take advantage of people in these situations and using this sort of venue, if you will, as a means to do so. And also, I think some of what we're talking about is in the industry itself. It's very male-dominated. It can be a good old boys network, and people get sort of the drunken pardon, to use that term, which I think we'll touch on a little bit, and that becomes a problem as well. So we're going to touch on a lot of this stuff. It's a very important show, so I do hope you stay tuned for that sort of sobering, but I promise we're going to have some fun throughout the show, of course, as we always do. Wanted to mention some things coming up here fairly soon. This Saturday, in Saturday from 1 to 5. Here we go. Louisiana Music Factory, which is, in my view, okay, they don't say this, I say this, it is the greatest record store in the world, friends. And they are now, they used to be down on, or up, I should say, from here, well, no, down from where we are now, on Decatur, right by Canal, for a number of years. And then 2-3 years ago, they moved to 421 Frenchman Street, there by all the music venues. They are celebrating their 25th anniversary as a record store. Now, I think those of us of a certain age know that we've seen really so many record stores disappear, you know, all the ones that we grew up going to, the little guys, the big guys, and everything in between. And Louisiana Music Factory has managed to hang on and basically, I think, be one of the finest record stores that really I've ever seen, and one of the best in the world. They focus on regional music. They specialize in that. They have, although they have other things, they have a great vinyl collection. They have musical instrument supplies. They have books. They have DVDs. Of course, they have CDs, all that stuff. And I'm a tactile guy, so I like to go flip through the CDs, kind of see what's new, just browse that way around on the end caps and see what's out there. They are fantastic in supporting local New Orleans and regional musicians. So even people that don't necessarily have label distribution, if they're self-distributing their recording, Louisiana Music Factory, Barry Smith, who is the owner and the gang there, they'll buy it and they will put it out on the shelf and they will make people aware of it, which I think is great. So I really want to encourage you to show up to this event. It's from 1 to 5 p.m., 421 Frenchman Street, Louisiana Music Factory. It is their 25th anniversary celebration. I'll be there on behalf of Pontchartrain Vineyards. We're going to be pouring wine for the 4 hours, so you can do a complimentary wine tasting. I think some other people might be there doing some interesting things. But at 1 o'clock, the Spectacular Smoking Time Jazz Club is playing. They're a great trad jazz band here in town. At 2 o'clock, man, the Iguanas are playing. If you don't know the Iguanas, you should. They've been around for a number of years, kind of New Orleans R&B with a Latino twinge to it and some other things going on. They're a fantastic band. Then at 3 o'clock, Johnny Sansone, who is out of Acadiana, who is, man, he is one of the most amazing harmonica players and singers out there. So he's going to be there blowing the swamp pop, and the blues. My wife loves him. I'm afraid that she's going to leave me when she goes to the show on Saturday. And then closing it out at 4 o'clock is Little Freddie King. Of course, Little Freddie King is, man, that guy's been around forever as well. Fantastic blues and New Orleans R&B guitar player. So again, Saturday, March 4th, 1 to 5 p.m., 421 Frenchman Street at Louisiana Music Factory. Come help them. Come help us celebrate their 25th anniversary and, you know, support local business, friends. Support, you know, you don't have to buy CDs. They got other stuff going on there. They got t-shirts. They got all kinds of cool stuff. So do check that out. Please do. We would love to see you out there. I want to mention that the Music Box Village, which is also a really cool thing, located at 4557 North Rampart Street here in town. That's right where Rampart ends and the levee there in the Bywater neighborhood begins, as they say. And their spring season's kind of launching or lifting up. Now, the Music Box Village, if you haven't been out there, is a really neat thing. You have these sort of shack size, if you will, houses. They're not quite mini houses there. You can actually walk in them and things. All these collaborative efforts to bring in local artists of all kinds of different genres. So they built these little structures and you sort of have this mini town, a little tiny town there, if you will, not to be confused with Tarrytown on the West Bank. Okay, I like to say that all the time, but it's a little mini village. But what they do is there's all kinds of really cool programming that goes on there throughout the year, really. So you can just kind of pop up and go check things out. I shouldn't say it goes on throughout the year, but goes on this time of year. You can go really, here's their hours, 12 to 6, starting on March 10th through Sunday, March 12th, 12 to 6, Friday, March 17th through 19th, and then 12 to 6 on Sunday, March 26th. And those are the public hours. You can kind of go wander around and check things out. But they also have a really cool concert schedule. And the concert schedule kicks off on Sunday, March 5th. And this is a really neat thing. A lot of these things are not just bands, local bands coming in and playing their typical set. They're doing sort of concept pieces, thematic pieces, narrative type pieces. So some really neat things and some really neat collaborators come out and play. The one that kicks off here on Sunday, March 5th, there's two shows at 6:30 and 8:30. I have been told they are promptly starting at 6:30 and 8:30. It's not that Tipitina's thing where they tell you doors at 10, show starts at 11:30, 6:30 and 8:30. Tank and the Bangas, who they're a great band, and they really are quite fantastic. They recently won an NPR Tiny Desk Award. I think they're going up to New York very soon to go receive their award and perform. Every time I hear them, they get better, which is kind of, a typical arc for a good band. But they're doing what they did last year. It's called Alice Lost Returns, and of course, it's based on an interpretation of Alice in Wonderland. There's all kinds of great stuff coming out. If you're interested in more with the Music Box Village, just go check out musicboxvillage.com. great programming. Go check it out. It's neat. Again, bring the kids during the day and go wander around. It is kid friendly for the concerts and stuff like that too, so you can go check that out. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. We're going to be right back with Tracy from the New Orleans Bourbon Festival. We're going to talk festival and bourbon. Come on back.
At the Saturday night fish fry, it was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen that scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Well, after I'm through this bottle of wine.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy Thursday. Happy post-Mardi Gras. I was mentioning very briefly at the top of the show that, of course, we took last Thursday off for Mardi Gras. I couldn't get anybody that wanted to be on the show, frankly, and I didn't want to be on it either. So if you're listening to the podcast and were wondering why you didn't get the monthly subscription thing, there was no new show. If you were listening last week, you got to hear a rerun. I hope you enjoyed it or heard it for the first time. So anyway, there's a little programming note. But we're back in action, friends, slowly but surely turning it around. And I'm going to kick it off with my first guest to help us turn it around, Tracy Napolitano, who is the executive director of the inaugural New Orleans Bourbon Fest. Tracy, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me on it today.
Absolutely, man. So this is really exciting. You guys are doing the what I am sure will be the first of many annual New Orleans Bourbon Festivals.
Well, that's what we're hoping.
Good. Good. So we're going to see how this one goes and then go from there? I'm sure it's going to be good.
Well, we're already planning, you know, next year's looking at the calendar. Okay. We're just, you know, we're going to get this one done first before we start. You know, we started our company, Brownwater Productions, to do other events, not just the Bourbon Fest,
okay,
to help local charities who need help or smaller charities who need help to build events and raise money. So we want to build other events for different charities around the city. The Bourbon Fest, we've dedicated to St. Michael's Special School. So we just want to keep the momentum going after the festival. We're looking at doing a repeal day party
later
in the year.
For sure.
And then we're talking about maybe some barrel racing somewhere in the city.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. So that's great. Yeah, and I love the repeal day idea. And we'll talk about that down the road when it gets a little closer. But, you know, all these people, everybody goes over to Tampa and goes over to Ybor City and all that stuff for repeal day. Let's keep some people here.
I think so.
I love that idea, man. That's really cool. So tell us a little bit about then about the organization and about the event. What was the impetus to do charitable work and put that kind of as the framework here around all this?
Yeah, that's kind of how we set it all up. We were sitting around. I've been collecting bourbon for about 10 years now. So we're sitting around the house. My wife, just to give a little, you know, background.
Give us your background too.
Well, I've been in sales my whole life. I did media sales. I worked at Intralox over in Harahan for a little while doing conveyor sales, covering the West Coast. And so I've been in sales since leaving LSU. And we were sitting around the house, just a few friends drinking some bourbon. And my wife turns around to the bar, which I've taken over our living room, more into a speakeasy. There's roughly 450 to 500 bottles of bourbon in our dining room.
Wow, man.
So she turns around. We've had a few a few drams already, and she says, "Hey, do something with this." So okay. I'm like, "Well, you want me to sell it? I'm not selling it. No way." Right. And she's, "No, you love bourbon so much, you know, make it a career. Figure out how to do something with it." And then that's when I told them about my idea for this festival. We were in Atlanta at the Wine and Food Festival in Atlanta. And on Friday night, they do a big grand tasting out at Piedmont Park. And the tent that had the most people in it was the bourbon tent, where they had, you know, more American comfort style foods and bourbon.
Perfect.
And that tent was overflowing with people. You had to wait to get in and out of it. And that's when I started thinking, could we do an event like this in New Orleans with bourbon?
I think the resounding answer would be yes, but go on with the story.
It is, yeah. So I brought it up to my wife, and our business partners were sitting at the table when we were doing this, and they're like, you know, this might be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
So that next week, I reached out to Michael Veach, who is a historian out of Louisville, and sent him an email through his website and said, "I'd love to talk to you. I've got an idea about a bourbon event in New Orleans. Want to get your thoughts." Never met him, just sent him an email. So he sent one back within an hour saying, "Hey, I'm available. Call me tomorrow. Here's my number."
Cool.
So I asked him, I said, "What do you think if we would put on a New Orleans bourbon festival, highlighting the connection of Kentucky to New Orleans and how bourbon got here?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "There's not a better place outside of Kentucky to have a bourbon festival," because it's his belief that the name bourbon comes from New Orleans, mm-hmm, and Bourbon Street, mm-hmm, and not Bourbon County, Kentucky.
Okay.
Now, there are other school of thoughts where it comes from Kentucky, but Michael believes it comes from Bourbon Street.
Interesting. And certainly we know that New Orleans was an amazingly important port city for bourbon.
Correct. I mean, if New Orleans wouldn't have been sitting here, you know, bourbon may not be what it is today.
Right.
Because they shipped it down, you know, wait for the water to rise, and shipped it down on the flatboats to get it to New Orleans.
Yeah.
For a retail sale.
And especially, I think, too, with the timing of rum kind of going down, you know, with the sugar tax and all that kind of stuff, right, bourbon came in and filled that void. And then here's New Orleans sitting as the port to get it to everybody.
Exactly. You know, big port city, French influence, just like Louisville.
Yep.
So, you know, it was, let's get the bourbon to New Orleans and see what, or let's get the whiskey. It wasn't called bourbon at the time. You know, put it in the charred barrels. And as the time it got here, it had a nice amber color, and bourbon was born.
Yeah, and that's an interesting part of the story that I think has gained a little bit of steam here, is that concept. It was, you know, people that were making it in Kentucky, for example, in that area, they were making a clear distillate, right?
Correct.
And that was the intent, essentially. But then shipping it in barrels for practical purposes created a whole new beverage as it came down the river.
Well, right. As the original story goes, they shipped it down here, and people weren't drinking it, and they're curious as to why it wasn't being consumed, and what people in New Orleans were drinking at the time, and it was cognac and brandy,
right?
And of course, they're aged in barrels, mm-hmm, in wooden oak barrels. So they came back and said, "Let's try this charred oak barrel. Put the whiskey in. Gets to New Orleans. It's amber. People start drinking
there, and that changed the whole, as you said, for a whole host of reasons, not just the port, but that New Orleans became a major market and an influential market then for whiskey.
Absolutely. I mean, it's where it, you know, it was shipped from Kentucky to New Orleans, for whether it's for just for sale in New Orleans or further out from the port. It came to New Orleans first.
Right. We like to intercept what comes through here. That was a good one to intercept.
Yes.
Now, tell me a little bit about yourself. Where'd you grow up, man?
I grew up in New Orleans.
Okay.
West Bank. Went to Holy Cross.
Okay. Right.
I made
on
that big drive across the bridge every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And out from there, went to LSU. Came back home and, you know, really never left, other than like most people after Katrina. Spent 6 months living in Houston because I needed an airport to do my job, to fly, because my territory was California, so I was doing a lot of flying. So yeah, I've been here my whole life, and I don't have any real intentions of leaving. Love it here.
Okay. So and I don't blame you. So what got you into bourbon then? Was it just a hobby then, essentially?
Well, it was. I got to LSU, needed a job. Of course, everybody is in college, I would think. Of course, I was, wanted to bartend. You know, that's, you want to be in the thick of things. So I started DJing in a bar in Baton Rouge called Sports Illustrated. Then I moved on to bartending and, you know, just started drinking. In college, you just drink whatever you can drink.
Whatever's right? Free or cheap, right?
So yeah, then, you know, the whole, you know, first time you bartend joke over there was to get the new guy drunk shooting wild turkey. So I'm sitting there just doing my shots, and these guys are all, what I found out later, were just drinking watered down Coke to look like bourbon. So needless to say, I didn't feel so good. I'm surprised I liked it as much because, you know, they put a bit of hurt on me. But since then, I've always drank bourbon, you know, and I occasionally drink scotch. I mean, I like whiskey.
So whiskey in general. Yeah. Well, Tracy, do me a favor, man. We're going to take a little break here on the show, do our bottom of the hour business as we always do. And we're going to come back, talk to you a little bit more about the festival and tell people how they can get involved and attend. And there's lots of cool stuff. It's not just grand tastings and stuff. There's a whole bunch of other stuff going on.
All kind of stuff going on.
Cool. We're going to get into that. Folks, we're chatting here with Tracy Napolitano, Executive Director of New Orleans Bourbon Festival, coming up March 24th, kicking off then. We're going to talk a little bit more about the festival. Come on back.
The French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pontalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market, making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey. The way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
Every afternoon when I wake up.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Yeah, that's a little Fats Domino. Strangely enough, from the Any Which Way You Can soundtrack, which was the sequel to Every Which Way But Lose, the pinnacle of filmmaking there by Clint Eastwood in the late 70s, we'll say that. If you like a chimpanzee that punches people and flips you off, those movies are really for you. Or a granny that sits on the porch and blows away the motorcycles that the guys are riding on. Nobody really gets shot in that movie. Anyway, more importantly here, we're chatting with Tracy Napolitano, who is the executive director of the upcoming inaugural New Orleans Bourbon Fest, and really exciting stuff. So, Tracy, the event kicks off. Well, technically, the stuff that you all are doing kicks off on Friday the 24th and goes on the Saturday and Sunday, but there's also some dinners going on Thursday night, right?
So, yeah, we first set out to do a couple of dinners. Now we have six dinners.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Around the city on Thursday night. So two of them three of them that we're really proud to have happening. At Salon by Sucre, we have Trey Zoller from Jefferson's Bourbon.
Okay.
We'll be there. So you'll get to meet the man behind the bourbon and the journeys on the ships with the ocean bourbon and things like that. And he's going to be there talking about Jefferson's journey and how, you know, the aging on the water and stuff. So it's going to be a really interesting dinner at Sucre.
So you get the educational component with the dinner and the good food, which I think, and you know this, with any wine or spirits dinner, I think people can sort of go do a color by numbers thing where it's just the wine and the food. And I think with a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of information that is presented, that really elevates that type of event to another level.
I agree. Chef's going to specifically pair Jefferson's bourbon with each course of the meal.
Perfect.
But it's going to be a four-course meal, start off with a cocktail. And at that dinner, when you leave, you will get a bottle to take with you that Trey can sign for you.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. So all the dinners are priced at $130.
Okay. And at every establishment.
At every establishment. They're the same price across the board. And one of the things we did with St. Michael's, one of my college roommates was the coach at St. Michael's, and he passed away last year. So that's kind of how we've kind of got the connection with St. Michael's. Okay. And our business partner's daughter goes to St. Michael's as well. And Pat was influential in getting her in the school.
Can you tell people, just to, don't mean to interrupt you there, Tracy, tell people a little bit about the school? Because we got a lot of people that may not know about St. Michael's.
Well, St. Michael's is a school for special needs children in New Orleans. And they feel a need in the city to take care of these special kids. And these kids are amazing. And this school really is just, it is an amazing place when you go and you see how people interact with the kids and stuff there. And they need help. They have a $1.4 million gap in their funding every year.
Wow.
So, of course, our long-term goal would be able to help them fill that gap as much as we possibly can. I'd love one day for this festival to be able to give them one big check for all of it. That would be our long-term goal. Mm-hmm. It's going to take us some time to get there, but I think we can achieve that one day. So, you know, we decided that we wanted to partner with them on this event. So, well, one thing with Pat passing away, we decided we're going to do two donations, one from the festival itself, and the other we're going to do, figure out a way to do another event in Pat's name. So we're calling it Pat's Gift. So all of the money we make from the dinners is going to go into Pat's Gift, and that money will be donated to St. Michael's as well in Pat's name.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Now, is there an auction component to some of this stuff or something tied into...
We were going to do that, but St. Michael's does a lot of fundraising through auctions. And, you know, you can kind of muddy the water with stuff like that.
Sure.
So we're strictly doing all of our donations via ticket sales.
Okay.
So that's how we're raising the money through ticket sales. And the dinners, it's, you know, we're paying, you know, for the dinners, and then we've added a little bit to it to for the donation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Foundation Room is going to be an amazing dinner because Fred Booker No III from Jim Beam, the master distiller, will be at that dinner.
And at the House of Blues.
The House of Blues.
Yep.
Right. And that's, you know, not everybody can get in there.
Yep.
Well, this is an opportunity for anybody who wants to go to the Foundation Room to have dinner in an amazing restaurant if you haven't eaten there. That place is...
That's really cool. And there are only a handful of events every year that are like that for a charitable cause that you can get into the Foundation Room.
Correct.
Yeah. So we have Foundation Room, and we have Salon by Sucre. Who else?
We have Jimmy Russell of Wild Turkey, who is another bourbon legend.
Yeah.
Will be at the Bourbon House.
Okay.
So that'll be another dinner we
have. Nice tie-in there, Bourbon House.
Exactly. Then we'll have Bernie Lovers from Heaven Hill, who's the whiskey ambassador for Heaven Hill. And he's in a bluegrass band as well. So he's going to be doing the bluegrass thing at the festival for us on Saturday. But we're going to be doing a dinner at Kenton's with Heaven Hill.
Oh, that's great. That's a great place. Right. Sean Joseph's and those guys, yeah.
And then we're doing At Morton Steakhouse will be Diageo.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the Diageo brand's Bullet, Blade & Bow will be there. And then we just signed on with Couchon to do a Sazerac dinner.
Oh, even better. So with Sazerac Rye Company. Yeah. So that is a fantastic list of both bourbon suppliers and producers,
yes,
as well as some of the finest eateries in town, both new and old, really, in this instance. That's a great lineup. So now I'm assuming that you had pretty good luck with these people. You told them what the cause was, and I'm assuming a lot of these people are donating at least some time and some muscle and that kind of thing to this intellectual property, that sort of stuff.
Some of it's being donated. Some of it we're covering the cost to put on the festival. Because one of the things we learned trying to get this together is that everybody gets asked for something all the time.
All the time.
So we went in with the idea that, you know, we're going to, you know, we're trying to build an event. So, you know, we didn't charge the liquor companies for the booth space. We gave it to them. Normally, most of the festivals and events charge the liquor companies. We want them to come in, show their product to the bourbon lovers. There's a lot of bourbon guys and gals out there. And
yeah, absolutely.
We want them here. Want them to enjoy it. Then we also, we're paying for the food. We're, you know, we worked out a deal where we'll pay at a cost for the food. So we're not asking everyone to give us free food.
Right.
Some people have. That's, you know, and that's great. If they do that, we love that too. You know?
And that's great. And you facilitate that. And that was sort of my point, I think, is that you facilitate that type of relationship. And then people give you often, so often what's common here in New Orleans with the good heart, a good spirit and nature of the community is people even give you value added to what's going on.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's really neat. So the dinners are going to be really fun, and that's a really exciting part about it. And then, well, you know, let's do this because we're going to take a break in about 3 minutes here. This is a show, as you know, Tracy, about drinking and eating. And so we do taste on the air and things like that. And you brought in a very nice bottle that I think a lot of bourbon lovers out there know and love. I appreciate you bringing that in. Why don't you tell people what you brought in and a little bit about it?
Well, I brought a bottle of Woodford Reserve from Brown-Forman. Woodford Reserve will be at our event, along with several other Brown-Forman products, Old Forester and Cooper's Craft.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's one that, you know, I think every bourbon drinker and bourbon lover knows, Woodford Reserve.
Yep.
And, you know, so I grabbed the bottle off the mantle in our office.
The home shelf,
Canal Street. Yeah. I didn't take it from the home bar. We have a little setup in our office is next to the Ronald McDonald House on Canal Street.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We have a few bottles hanging out in the office. So I said, you know what, I'm going to grab one and bring it with me today, and we can enjoy a little Woodford Reserve.
I appreciate it, man. And this is always one of my favorites because I think it's a nice cross of a quality product at a good price point, really.
It is. I mean, a lot of people, even when you're just getting in the bourbon, you're not wanting to spend more than, you know, $30 to $50 for a bourbon. Not kind of crazy like me who will go beyond. I'm trying to.
Where you have friends calling you from Miami.
Right. Saying, hey, can you find this? Or, hey, I found this, you know.
That was an off-air story, yeah. Friends. But anyway, a friend called him from Miami to say that they've got the, which one was it?
It was Hibiki 17.
Hibiki 17. Yeah. Saying, they got a bottle sitting here you want. And you're like, I'll take everything they have.
So, you know, so it's a great bourbon for people to start when they're looking to get into bourbon is, you know, just like a Basil Hayden, mm-hmm. Woodford. They're in that price category, Buffalo Trace.
Yep.
It's a great place for people to start as they're working their way into deciding how far they want to take this passion for bourbon.
Now, let me ask you this, Tracy, before we take the break real quick, because I think I know the answer to this question because we did talk about it off air. This is the Bourbon Festival, so we're focusing on bourbon in this instance. But you, especially while we were just talking about the Japanese stuff, so you're a fan of whiskey in general, the broader family across the board.
Yes. I mean, I drink whiskey. You know, when I go out, I generally drink whiskey. I do. I had a rough incident with some Irish whiskey, so I'm not too fast to pull the trigger and getting a glass of Irish whiskey. But for the most part, it's bourbon, you know. But on a good, you know, nice cold night, you know, nothing wrong with grabbing a nice scotch.
Nice scotch, absolutely.
Yeah. And like I said, Japanese whiskeys, they're pretty popular today. So I do enjoy a good glass of Hibiki every once in a while.
Yeah, there's some really interesting stuff going on, and then all kinds of using different vessels for aging and all that. So we've actually done a lot of shows on whiskey in general, and so people can go back and check that stuff out on the podcast. Don't want to bog that down here. Well, Tracy, what we're going to do, we're going to take a little bit of a break, take care of a little bit of business here at the quarter of the hour, and then we're going to come back and we'll talk a little bit more about the, we'll call this the heart of the festival, the stuff going on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and talk about how people can get tickets and get there, man.
All right, perfect.
Cool. Friends, coming back, we're chatting with Tracy from New Orleans Bourbon Festival. And take a little break. Come on back.
But if I did, I'd give hell to you.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Greetings, New Orleans. This is James Moises of Moises Wines, thanking you for 6 years of drinking my Pinot Noir from the Willamette Valley of Oregon. Seeing how my wine has become a big part of many of your memories and special occasions has surpassed my expectations. From me and the entire Moises Wine family, thank you for all your support. Let's toast with Moises Wines for the holidays and a happy and healthy new year. All the best. Cheers.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy post-Mardi Gras Thursday, everybody. Yeah, a little bit of Grateful Dead there for you. As you know, if you listen to the show on a regular basis, I grew up in California, so we're spinning what can kind of be considered more or less a New Orleans classic, but I'm doing the Grateful Dead version. And I'm chatting here with Tracy Napolitano, who he is the executive director of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, and we're not going to go down this road, Tracy, but you know, you spend a lot of time out in California, so that's where the Grateful Dead's from, so it's appropriate for you too. Sort of. I'm stretching here, man. Yeah. I'm just looking for an excuse to play a little bit of the Dead here on the show. But anyway, so we're chatting a little bit about the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, inaugural one, first annual, I think, of many, to be sure. We talked a little bit about the dinners, but then we kind of get into the meat and potatoes, if you will, of the events Friday, March 24th through Sunday, March 25th.
Right. So what we have starting Friday during the day, our ultimate VIP ticket is we're doing a little spin on the bourbon judging, the bourbon awards.
Okay.
So instead of bringing in master tasters and sommeliers to judge the bourbons, we've kind of gone on a course of more of a people's choice.
I like it.
So our little tagline is, if you buy it, you drink it, you judge it. So we have 30 tickets available to be the judge of the bourbons.
Oh,
so okay. The liquor companies are, and the distilleries are submitting their bourbons for a blind judging. And we have a criteria laid out for our judges to follow when they're in the tasting room. So we're going to be doing that on Friday during the day in a couple of segments, because you know you don't want to kill your taste buds
right
while you're going through this. So we've broken it up into a few segments during the day on Friday. Then on Friday evening at 6:30, the doors will open for our VIP guests. So they'll get 1 hour in the sugar mill before anyone else gets there. So they're going to get to taste, you know, some special bourbons that will be there from the distilleries that will only be available to the VIP guests.
Okay.
And then at 7:30, the doors get opened up and everyone comes on in, and you're going to have bourbon tastings and food from some of the great restaurants in New Orleans. We have a couple really, Couchon.
Yep.
We have on Friday night, we have the guys at Drago's, but they're doing a Fleur de Lis shrimp instead of oysters.
So
they're going to do something a little different. On Saturday, we have Morton's participating, Salon by Sucre, and Sucre on the dessert side will be there.
Doing a little chocolate
And then we have a great chocolatier coming in from Kentucky called Art Eatables. and they do bourbon truffles. So they will also be selling a box of Bourbon Fest chocolates that will be made with 12 different bourbons that will be presented at the show.
Oh, that's really exciting. At the festival. I like that. So, and that, you know, just to touch on that, chocolate and bourbon's a nice pairing. I think a lot of people don't think that necessarily, because you might think porty, you might think red wine. It's a very nice pairing.
Chocolate and bourbon go well. If you go to Woodford for their tastings, they use chocolate during their tastings as well.
Okay. So now that's the grand tasting then on Friday. So
and on Friday, yes.
Will it be presented such that the food in one area and the bourbons in the other, are we kind of match? And
we're going to mix it up because we want people to, you know, not go down rows of bourbon and say, oh, I should eat.
Yeah.
So we want, as you're going down the rows, there are going to be food, you know, mixed in with the bourbon booth. So, but we want everybody to eat and enjoy the bourbon, but we want everybody to eat. And, you know, and make sure they're taking care of themselves while they're there.
Right. That's great. Now, so on Saturday, I think this is also a really interesting component of the event. You guys are doing some seminars.
Right. We have 22 seminars on Saturday. So depending on what level, connoisseur or VIP level tickets, you get the seminars included with your ticket.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. So our grand tasting ticket is a Friday night and a Saturday night ticket. Those are just for the tastings. But the connoisseur and the VIP tickets get you the tastings, and on the VIP side, you get to go both nights of the tastings.
Now, will there be different bourbons, or is it just a chance for you to kind of cover
the bourbons?
More
will be the same. We will have different restaurants on both nights.
Okay,
some of the restaurants are doing both nights, but we have, you know, like, you know, Drago's will be there on Friday, but not Saturday. Morton's will be there on Saturday, not Friday. So we're going to have different stuff throughout the venue on each night,
and that gives you the opportunity, folks, to be able to go to the event and cover, you know, be able to taste more, cover more ground, not feel like you have to rush through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We want everybody, you know, we don't want to pack everyone into one night in the Sugar Mill. That's why we're doing two nights.
Okay.
We want it to be a comfortable flow of people throughout the venue. So, you know, we could have gone one night like most whiskey festivals, but then, you know, we're trying to cram everybody into one venue, and we didn't want to do that. We want everybody to be enjoyable and have fun.
That makes all the sense in the world. And we'll circle back on this too at the end of the segment in about 5 minutes, but where is it? We haven't even touched on that yet.
So, exactly. Our host hotel is, and the headquarters of the event is the Convention Center Marriott.
Yep.
So right across the street from the Convention Center. And the grand tasting will be at the Sugar Mill on both Friday and Saturday night.
Okay.
And then on Sunday, the awards brunch will be in the Grand Ballroom at the Marriott.
So, and let's talk a little bit about then. We talked about the seminars, the two grand tastings Friday and Saturday night, seminar Saturday, and awards brunch on Sunday.
So the awards brunch is basically what it sounds like. It's an awards brunch. We got the judging on Friday, and then we're going to have all the results tabulated. And on Saturday at 11:30, when the brunch kicks off, we'll have a nice bourbon brunch with some bourbon-themed cocktails and food. And then we will give out the awards for the bourbons that won
Different categories, I'm assuming.
Different
right?
categories. Of course, we're going to have a best in show, best in fest.
Okay.
We're going to have a straight bourbon 4 years and older. We're going to have a cash strength category. We're going to have an American rye category. We're going to do a small batch. And, you know, so we've got a, you know, steak and pick. They're able to submit a bottle for two categories.
Okay.
So
each producer
can submit five different brands of their bourbons, but they can only enter it into two different categories.
Got it.
So they can't say, I want them in all the categories.
Got
so
it.
They have to pick where they want it. And all the bourbons are, of course, in best and fest.
Okay.
So someone will win the best bourbon
best
in the
bourbon
festival
show.
Award, right.
That's exciting. And is the... I'm assuming the hotel is putting on the food then for the brunch on Sunday?
The hotel is doing the brunch, yes.
Okay. Now, with some of the seminars, just I want to touch on this just for a minute or so. What are some of the seminars on Saturday?
So we've got, like I said, 22 different seminars. Michael Veach, bourbon historian, will be in town. He will be doing one on the Bottled and Bond Act. He's going to do, I believe it's six sources of flavor. And then he's going to talk about bourbon in Kentucky and New Orleans, and where the exact conversation him and I had when I came up with the idea for the festival.
That's great. All of that sounds really fascinating. So you can come and educate yourself on the process of bourbon, how it's made, these sorts of things. And then the historical component that we were talking about at the top of the show here a little bit, which I think that's a really cool story. And I think people will get a lot from that.
It is. And you know, we're going to have other people there that don't agree with Michael on that story, that will tell their version of how it was named. And then another thing we're focusing on, the women in bourbon, because women play a huge part in bourbon, not only in history, but today.
Often as tasters and things like that, right?
Well,
and
the distilleries. The first female master taster is Peggy No Stevens.
Yeah.
And Peggy will be doing a bourbon and food pairing. And she will also sit on a panel, a bourbon women's panel that we'll have.
That's great.
At the festival. And our big, what I'm very excited to see is we have Fred Ngo and Jimmy Russell together on the same stage. So for a bourbon's legend seminar. So you're going to be sitting there and listen to the two biggest legends in bourbon today. Talk about bourbon,
how it's made, the
experiences they've had over the years. So that's going to be really great. I think that's going to be our largest session with about, it happens once during the fest. Maybe roughly about 300 people, 250, 300 people in that room.
That's going to be great. You've done a really good job, Tracy, of putting some great programming, especially for your first year. So I'm very confident that this will not be a one and done.
Oh, I'm hoping that I have that same confidence. You know, now I woke up after Mardi Gras knowing, all right, we've got 4 weekends until this happens. And so the nerves are starting to kick in as we get there.
That's what the bourbon's for, man.
That's what the bourbon's for, yes.
Well, Tracy, do me a favor. Tell people where they can find you all online and where they can buy tickets and get more information on the whole thing.
So you can find us online at www.nobourbonfest.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NO Bourbon Fest. Tickets through Eventbrite. There's a link through our website. You can also get lodging at the hotel. We have a special rate at the Marriott. All that can be done through the hotel.
Fantastic.
I mean, through the website.
Through the website, yeah. So it's you can do either, it looks like you can do two. You can do NO Bourbon Fest or do New Orleans Bourbon Festival. You guys have so.
Yeah, I shortened it because my email was too long with Tracy Napolitano at NewOrleansBourbonFestival.com.
Right,
so
right.
I bought the other domain and shortened it.
That makes a lot of sense. So you can't go wrong with Google. You're going to find it that way. Friends, it's great. It's a charitable event. It's also going to be, I think, an incredible event for tasting, an incredible event for knowledge. March 24th, 25th, and 26th here in New Orleans, the inaugural New Orleans Bourbon Festival. Tracy, thanks so much for being here today.
I appreciate you having me.
Hey, my pleasure. And I look forward to seeing you at the event. We'll be there.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you as well.
Awesome. Friends, come on back for the second hour of the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to talk about a serious subject. We're going to talk a little bit about sexual violence and assault in the alcohol industry, the cocktail industry, and so on. So come on back for that, please.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful, fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose, Coquille Blanc. Cheers.
Night before last, I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey. On a bottle of whiskey. Night before last, I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey. On a bottle of whiskey. Though I feel all right.
Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to hour number two of the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in, friends. After Mardi Gras, happy to be back in the chair after taking last week off. Thanks to Tracy Napolitano from New Orleans Bourbon Festival for being here, talking about that great event coming up March 24th, 25th, and 26th. A lot of fun there. And pleased to welcome two of my good friends, Molly Bird and Mark Shetler, to the show. Thanks for being here, you both.
Hey, Brian.
Hi.
Brian.
You're right up in there, Molly.
Yeah, I know.
All right. And it was good to see you. Well, Molly, I got to see you over Mardi Gras. Mark, I'm sorry I did not get to see you over Mardi Gras. I couldn't make it that far, man. It was a few blocks away. It was too hard.
I had a hard time making it that far myself. And I run that bar.
And you run that bar. You're over at general manager there at Bar Tonique, as well as the president of the New Orleans chapter of the United States Bartenders Guild, Molly, of which Molly is a member. And Molly, you're also working over there at up there, down there from here.
Around there.
Jeez. Don't ask me cardinal directions here in New Orleans right now, Thursday after. You're at Cannon Table.
Yes, sir.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
River-wise.
River-wise. There you go.
Which still felt like a long walk to get over to see Mark.
Down the river. Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah, exactly. Well, you guys, we're here to talk about, we're joking a little bit about Mardi Gras and getting through Mardi Gras and all that good stuff. And but we're here to talk about a serious subject, friends, that if you follow us on social media, I encourage you to do so at NOLA Drinks. We are talking about sexual assault, sexual violence, and how some of these issues play out and are connected to the cocktail industry, the bar industry, really the liquor industry. And then I think some of the backdrop to this, of course, is just sexual violence in general. But I think when we put the lens, or perhaps the setting, if you will, of alcohol around this, it changes the flavor of things, doesn't it? No pun intended. that was really no pun intended. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree with that. I want to just add also, we're probably going to be talking pretty frankly about a lot of this stuff for the next hour.
Yes.
So whatever that might mean for anybody who's listening.
Well, this is an adult show, and this is an adult topic, of course. And, you know, we're not going to use any crude language or anything. There will be some stuff that we, of course, we know that. Yeah, for real. It's the radio,
careful,
man.
Careful, Mark.
Yeah, careful, Mark. We do have the 7 seconds. I gave BJ, who works the board, as he always does, has been given the notice to be, Sylvia, my lovely wife, is sitting across.
You give him that notice.
Don't be in the way of the mute button.
You give him that notice every time I come in, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, man.
Well, and that's all right, man. It's good. And this is, as I said to you guys in an email earlier this morning about the show, this is a passionate issue. And this is an issue that is important. I think it's an issue that, of course, I mean, I'm really stating the obvious here, but I think how the rubber hits the road in the alcohol, I'm just going to use, just to simplify things, you guys, I'm going to say the alcohol business in a sense. We're really talking about the bar setting.
Yeah. Bar and restaurant industry.
Yeah. Hospitality
alcohol world,
industry.
These are all interchangeable.
Exactly. But I want to make it clear that we're not really going to get into some of the larger issues, and we're really kind of, we're going to address this, folks, in future shows. So let me be clear about that. So we, even in an hour that we have or so, we're not going to get all the way down this road. No one can. So I just want to keep it sort of reined in to a certain degree about what we're talking about here. And I think I just sort of kicking things off. It does seem when we talk about the alcohol business, I think it does, as you said, Mark, it by definition creates gray areas where there seems to be either maybe a combination of ignorance or tolerance or a blind eye to this stuff where you don't see it in other sectors. Is that a fair characteristic, Molly? No, any question, y'all jump in.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot that goes on in bars that you wouldn't necessarily see in a office building.
And a lot.
This is no exception.
Mm-hmm. You know, to your point, a lot of what we traffic in is nuance. It's, you know, we're creating a volatile environment by it's virtue vice. Of introducing alcohol into the equation. Inhibitions are getting lowered. It's a place where you're going to see the best and worst of what, not even necessarily individuals, I mean, certainly that, but just kind of societal norms, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not seeing them reinforced, you're certainly seeing them presented.
Absolutely.
Right. Then go ahead, Molly, were you going
to
add something?
Just that it's meant to be a more permissive space than most others.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people misinterpret that to mean that it's something where, anything goes.
Yeah, I mean, I hearken to it all the time, this idea of the third place that bars are. It's that Olmsted idea. It's not home. It's not work. It's the third place. And part of what we are as people, as this society, are getting out of that third place is, to Molly's point, that less structured environment that, to whatever extent it may be, that safer place to not be rubbing up against boundaries the whole time.
Yeah, you're going to have fun, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you're going to blow off steam. You're going to maybe get away with what did happen at work or at home. But, you know, as Mark said, that making it a safer place to sort of relax can often lead to it being an extremely an unsafe place for other people inhabiting it.
Right. And, you know, and I think that I don't want to put words in your mouth, Molly, but one of the things that I think that is worth stating now at this point is, you know, if you take any community, if you take any industry, if you take any gathering of people, okay, no matter where you are, no matter what the setting is, you're going to have people that are bad eggs. And and you're going to have people, in this case, we're talking about sexual predation.
Yeah.
I think by and large, right? We're not talking about, there was one of the articles that you sent me, Mark, that I was reading, where we're not talking about regretted sex. Okay. And this is not a bad decision where you went home with somebody that it was all consensual and then you went, oh, I shouldn't have done that. We're talking about a situation where people are taking advantage of a playing field, if you will, to predate. Most of the time. I think this is the crux of a lot of the issue, correct?
I think saying that this is the crux of the issue, I think is a more accurate way for us to say it. I mean, we certainly hope that, and I don't think you disagree, I think that we certainly hope that we aren't putting people in situations where consensual sex becomes regretted sex.
Right.
But, you know, to say, to your point, we are largely addressing predation. We are certainly capable of addressing other things within that.
Perhaps maybe even just the more nuanced forms that predation takes. It's really easy to say, oh, that man is being creepy, that woman, this is unwanted. But honestly, we need to get into the bar specific, the alcohol industry specific nuances that accompany what is truly still predation, but maybe doesn't fit what a lot of people in their minds deem to be a classic case.
Yeah, I mean, it's an ism that often, I think, especially, you know, these days, as it were, gets kind of run over and discounted. But, you know, rape culture is a real thing. And we see it. And, you know, the extent to which we are explicitly involved in it as bartenders, I'm not sure of. But implicitly, you know, by virtue of giving venue to a place where that, to a space where that is happening, you know, we have work to do to, redevelop the space that we create in our bar so that it is a safer place where that type of stuff isn't allowed. And rape culture goes to the far extreme of rape, and to the, you know, I'm using heavy scare quotes right now, right. But of
sexual intimidation
or just language.
Language,
you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Objectifying language shared between two men.
Yep.
And you're talking about women. Like, that's also not okay.
Right. Now, and I think, Molly, to a point to what you were saying is, and this sort of nuance, we'll use that term, or grayer, or people, you know, you might think that rape or some of these things is you picture somebody holding a gun to somebody's head and saying, this is going to happen, and otherwise things are going to turn out worse for you, you should cooperate. We're talking about people that I think in many of these situations come in and they see a playing field, they see a venue. I keep using that word playing field again for lack of a better term, but a venue where you're not using a weapon. You're using, you're taking advantage.
It's drug
facilitation
assault.
Through alcohol. Yep.
Right. And okay. I think that to a certain extent, that idea of that concept of force, she had a knife to her throat, she had a gun to her head, it was a man she never met, it was a dark alley.
He was being physically aggressive, you know, in the bar.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that actually does a disservice to even a lot of the physiological reactions to intimidation or sexual assault, sexual violence.
So I mean, let's talk about tonic mobility, or immobility, excuse me. You
right.
Know, like your physical ability to be reacting and you know, fighting.
Right. Trauma,
gone.
when you go through trauma, when you're experiencing a trauma, you freeze. So that whole idea of, oh, well, was he didn't have a weapon, or he didn't, you know.
The weapon was the power that was being exercised all along the way.
Right, which can be psychological and any number of other things.
And that's why we say the word, you know, drug facilitated, right?
Right.
You can facilitate that exercise of power, domination, predation, and violence. This can be party to it.
Right, and alcohol exacerbates that situation.
Right, it exacerbates the situation.
We're not sitting here saying it's the cause, but it absolutely exacerbates pre-existing.
I don't want to say that it can be. It is.
It is. And I think this is important if we want to use the language of logic. It is a contributing factor. It is not a causal factor.
Correct.
Yeah.
You guys, we're going to take a little break here on the show, take care of a little bit of business briefly, and then we're going to come back and chat a little bit more with Molly and Mark about this important topic, sexual assault and violence in the hospitality industry and alcohol industry. Lots to unpack here, friends. Come on back.
My book has got a hole in it. My book has got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Baggio heads up the Small Plates and Charcuterie Kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street or go to our website. DrinkLabNola.com.
Dad's been shucking dozens since 42. Iron tub ice down full of Falstaff brew. Black head of son, Bobby Charles Cold Blue. Catholic Church bells.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. A little goal stream by Roddy Romero and the Hub City All-Stars. They were nominated for 2 Grammys, friends. They didn't win. They should have won, including that song for regional roots tune, and the album was nominated Goldstream. Go check it out. It's really good. We are chatting here with Mark Shetler and Molly Bird from the NOLA chapter of the U.S. Bartenders Guild, which is not necessarily technically connected to this, but I needed an overarching thing. Sure. And we're going to have some breaking news for you. Yeah, thank you. We're going to have some breaking news here. And we are talking about sexual assault connected to the hospitality and alcohol industry. And one of the things that we were talking about, well, we're talking about several things during the break. Again, this is a subject that is, of course, very complex, as we all know. This is something that can't be unpacked in an hour show. We will address this. We're not going to solve anything per se here today. But we want to make sure that we frame this in a way that we cover some ground here, absolutely, hopefully effectively today. And one of the things that we were talking a bit about is in any industry, I think that you have issues. As we were chatting, that 90% of all sexual assault victims are females. So we're largely talking about females as victims in this situation. And we're talking about an industry, I think, that even kind of blurs things even further, because we are talking about the bar. We're talking about a nuanced environment. You said the third place, a gray area, all of this stuff. And it does. It makes things more difficult for somebody to come forward as a victim, I think, both if you work in the industry and perhaps even somebody who's trying to, and we'll unpack all of this, trying to intervene from the outside. Is that a fair characterization?
I think that is. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, victim blaming is very much a thing. You know, one of the most important things, if we're jumping on the soapbox real quick for any bartenders who are listening, believe the victim, believe the accuser. And that's not something that we are just culturally really engaged in.
The first and best thing you can do right off the bat, even if you don't know what resources you have available to you or to the victim, first and best thing you can do is to believe what they're telling you.
Right. And, you know, and that's a great point. And I think, too, where if somebody's asking for help, they're asking for help. This is not, you're not thin-skinned. You're not weak. You're asking for help because you're in a situation you don't want to be in.
You're in my bar, and you've sat down, and you don't know what you want to drink. Can I see a menu? Yes.
I do that all the time in your bar.
I've given you a glass of water, and it's spilled. Do you have a towel you can clean this up with? I mean, you know, I would like to leave now. Can I have my check?
Mm-hmm.
These are all opportunities where I'm engaged in helping you.
Right.
You know, every moment that we're in a bar, there are those little, you know, crises and conflicts that mm-hmm. we're addressing. And to turn your back on these instances of sexual assault because it's uncomfortable or what, you know, myriad reasons perhaps that are all BS, for not engaging.
It's a failure of your job absolutely. As a professional.
I mean, this is the absolute worst thing that realistically happens in any bars. It's a little bit more than a spilled glass of water. Yeah, and we need absolutely. To be doing more to be helping.
Well, and let's, because I think we need to kind of break this down maybe into two things, if that's fair, is that picking the first one that we kind of touched on, where we're talking about people working in the industry. Let's maybe start there because I think that that's kind of different. And maybe using a springboard, something that I read today that you all sent me on a website called, and you can just spell all this out, it's the reality of sexual assault in the cocktail community.com. That is one long domain. But we were talking about a particular individual who, at least at this point, 15 women have come out and said, this guy in LA sexually assaulted these people, so all of these women, and all of these women were brave enough to come forward and tell the story. But a lot of the language that was used was people, again, sort of blaming the victim. Why didn't you come out earlier? Why didn't you leave? Why didn't you do this?
You read a lot of the stories, and I think that I would really hope that this doesn't come off as pointing at them also, but kind of exposing these cultural things that we're talking about, a lot of the tenor or the tone that you can pick up in some of those stories is women who feel like they're having to justify the fact that they're even bringing this up.
Right.
Go on, Molly.
Right. And I mean, these are all women in the industry who are, can I say badass on the radio?
Yeah. That's one you can get away
with. Awesome.
Too
awesome.
Late. I don't see BJ diving for the mute button.
Okay,
we're
good. Good. Because especially talking about female bartenders, that's a word that it comes up a lot in my vocabulary. You know, there's a lot to sort of prove yourself as a woman in this industry, and you know, to say, oh well, maybe your skin should be thicker, maybe you should, you know, that's something that when you're dealing with customers who are making you uncomfortable, even, and never mind when you're dealing with someone who's a mentor who, let's be honest, just based on numbers, based on the history of this industry, is more often than not going to be a guy.
And that is that is the most common situation with sexual assault is somebody you know.
Absolutely. It's
80%. Yeah.
So,
let's finish and I'll come back to
you. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, so not only are you worried about, you know, degrading your relationship with someone who helped you get to where you are in a business sense.
Signs your paycheck, perhaps.
Signs gives your paycheck.
A reference.
And,
sure.
I mean, frankly, and even the same way when you have to deal with a customer who, when you
need, got your tip line,
who's got your tip, you know, you have to make a really hard call of saying, okay, no, this isn't me not being tough enough to be in this industry. Because as a female in this industry, you're sort of told, all right, you better steel yourself to whatever, because a lot more is going to come at you.
Yep.
than
by virtue of being a female.
Just by virtue of being a female.
Right.
So, okay. And a lot of times it can feel like it's a failure on your part to be tough enough or strong enough, but when really the reality is that our male counterparts, our peers, don't actually have to come up against this.
Nobody
stuff.
Ever told me that I needed to have thicker skin.
Right. Right. And you know, and this is a really important point, and maybe a little bit subtle that I don't want to make sure that we didn't gloss over here a little bit, is that these phenomena that we're talking about here, Molly, that you just articulated really well, can really happen essentially anywhere in any industry.
Absolutely.
They do.
They do.
And they do.
And But what we're talking about here in this particular industry is that we have that layer of alcohol. We have that layer of sort of good old boy network that I think obfuscates, I'll use that word, things even further than what might be kind of obvious to us in built, you know, an industry where you're building widgets.
Absolutely, Brian. I think you're totally correct in that.
Yeah, and you know, a problem's an opportunity for a solution, right?
Yep.
So we're talking about, we're bartenders. This is the business we know. And this is an opportunity for a solution that bartenders haven't been taking.
And we're going to come back and talk a little bit about that, Mark, because we're going to take a little bit of a break here at the bottom of the hour. We're going to get into some strategies, some solutions. I think we need to kind of unpack a little bit about what these strategies may look like in the short term and what you can do on the ground, what some of these strategies and things we can talk about that need to happen in the long term and some other things. And then some really cool stuff that you all are up to address these larger issues as well. Friends,
and breaking news.
And breaking news. Hey, breaking we got breaking news. We never have breaking news on this show, so I'm really excited about that. Friends, coming back to the last half an hour of the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's grand dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon dining room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to over-oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Drinking that wine is their delight. When they get drunk, they want to fuss and fight. Hooping and hollering and talk all night.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. Friends, we're chatting with Mark Shetler and Molly Bird, and we're talking a little bit about, we're talking a lot about sexual assault as it's connected to the hospitality industry and alcohol industry. One of the things that we were referencing, we talked, and again, I do want to reemphasize this point, is that we are going to come back to this topic again and again and again on this show. So I'm just laying that out there right now because we could have any.
You're
going
to have to be listening to us do it.
Yeah, and you're going to have to tune in to listen to it, or you can get the podcast whenever the hell you want. That's fine too. A little shameless plug. But, you know, we can kind of go down any number of rabbit holes here, and I think we kind of want to give it a little bit of a topical overview. And go ahead, Molly.
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, I think that it's important that this isn't just is not a one-off, and that even making it part of the conversation when we talk about drinking, I think is just a step in the right direction.
Yeah, this is a niche that opens up into a mansion.
Exactly. And, you know, many topics that we know we like to talk about, gender issues behind the bar, LGBTQ issues behind the bar, agave production in Mexico. I mean, anything that has a social component to this.
It should all be in the same conversation.
And it continued, Molly, thank you, in a continued conversation. But what I wanted to bring up here is we were talking about this particular study that was done by the University of Toronto and the University of Washington. And what they did is that they sent in, they trained 140 young adults to go into bars, and this was in the Toronto area, and they wanted them to note every incident of aggression that they saw. They found that 25% of all incidents involved sexual aggression, and 90% of the victims with sexual aggression were women. A lot of other numbers here, but one of the things that I wanted to point out, and we can come back to some of the other numbers because you guys got them, is that I think there's this perception that what happens in bars often is that people get drunk and it's boys will be boys. This is a situation where there was no correlation and no relationship was found between the aggressor in the man in almost every instance here and their level of intoxication. There was no statistical relationship to this. This was predation.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong on it. I think it was just, 1,000 instances, just interactions.
Just straight up interactions.
This wasn't I don't know that it was aggressive interactions.
Oh, yeah, well, so what they said is, in this particular article, I think that this is kind of summarizing things, so this may be wrong, but what they said here is they found that 25% of all incidents involved sexual aggression.
Right.
Yeah. And so incidents just being interactions.
Interactions, precisely. And then 90% of the victims of sexual aggression of that 25% then were women harassed by men. The point that I simply wanted to make here, too, is that people, again, think, oh, it's miscommunication or misunderstanding. Yeah. There was no, it's not just the dude's drunk and he's kind of hitting on the chick. This is deliberate.
That's patriarchy and rape culture.
Exactly. Precisely. Using alcohol as a weapon and taking advantage of this venue, this playing field to pursue this.
And grossly downplaying what's happening in that moment.
Yeah. And so let's elaborate on that.
Right. Well, and there's also, I think, a lot of people, again, just to make themselves feel a little better. Okay. Well, maybe if I don't get drunk, then this won't happen to me if I don't do this. But honestly, the correlation is generally that both the victim and the perpetrator are both drinking.
Yeah.
Because obviously if you're at a bar, it's a community, you know, a situation.
Absolutely.
Everyone is socially drinking. So there's not this idea that it's a woman who's sitting there or that she's absolutely hammered and then some guy comes in and says, "Cool, I haven't been drinking at all. I'm gonna take advantage of this woman who's been drinking." No, it's
certainly happens, but that's
right, but,
not
but
it's
I think
the
that
overwhelming
that,
majority the other
right,
way.
Right. I think that does a disservice to
the
frequency with which we see this among just regular bar patrons, both of whom are drinking because once again they are at a bar.
That's what you do. And it harkens to this thing where where people use this. It still happens now. It was a lot more prevalent in years past where, you know, she deserved it because she was wearing a short skirt.
You know what the number one cause of sexual assault is?
What is it, Mark?
People who are sexual assaulting other people.
Right. Yeah. And that's like the leading cause of death is death, like Monty Python, like
yeah, used to
like
so to let's, say. let's keep that in mind when we're right. talking yeah. about who's at fault.
I think another I heard recently someone said this phrases in a way that I really, instead of thinking of victims as mothers and daughters and sisters, why don't we think of perpetrators as fathers and brothers?
Yeah. Sons. Yeah, absolutely. You
know, because that...
This is where the fault lies, right? I think we need to make that clear, is that this is where the fault lies. It's not because, you know, as a female, you were hammered or your skirt was short. Somebody is predating on you and they're the ones that are doing this.
Correct. And they're... And yes, you are... It's a... Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so... We talk a little bit, let's talk, because we touched again on the industry and a little bit of this sort of thing. There's a lot more that I wanted to touch on, but go ahead, Mark. Yeah,
well, please, I was just going to say, please. I mean, when we talk about creating safer spaces for our patrons,
that's kind of where I wanted to go.
We're not,
that's
actually, yeah, we're not talking about, you know, how we can, we're not necessarily keyed in on how we can make this a safer space for, or how we can look at potential victims, right? We're talking about, also, if not more so, how we can make sure that these are not spaces where predation is like happening, mm-hmm. where it is
or
present
accepted.
Or acceptable. Exactly. Or, yeah.
Can I make one point real quick, just sure. back on that last thing, because I did want to touch on this. So we were talking about this before we went on the air, that and reiterating this maybe a little bit, is that, you know, there's the reductive effort to, you know, reduce versus prevent.
Exactly.
And those are two different things. And I think that plays a little bit into what you're saying, Mark. But the part of the problem with the reductive thing, we did touch on this, is that reducing is not solving the problem. It's actually trying to give the victim, in a certain sense, tools to avoid it from happening, some of which are probably really unfair given the setting. That's not really attacking the root of the problem, which is what I think I was trying to get at, is that the root of the problem is the predator.
Right.
Right. And the culture that that allows the right. predator to predate and also to feel as though these spaces, bars, that's it.
It
I hate even calling it a safe space
a
for
safe
them.
A safe space for, the, right, yeah,
but that,
for them.
That they know that, right. I know, it seems,
I shouldn't
just,
laugh,
it's counter,
but it's almost ridiculous,
I know,
isn't
it's
it?
Counterintuitive, but I mean, to say that, oh, that this is, let's call it a permissive space, that this is a permissive, you know, this is someplace yeah. that they can get away with it because they can say, she was drunk, or I was drunk, or it's a bar.
We were just talking.
I can't tell you how many times I hear people saying, you know, it's the proverbial locker room.
Yeah. Oh, come on, lighten up.
As it were.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bar. It's a fun space. Lighten up. It's a bar. Anything goes here. Well, you know.
We can, I mean, and look, like, you know, we talked about this issue that in bars, it's this. Complete. I mean, I don't. It's a recent creation. This taboo of talking about religion and politics, right? Those are the two things you don't talk about in bars. You know. Meanwhile,
to exclude bars from these tough conversations excludes them from any progress.
And you know,
and we know that
that's not how bars used to work.
That's right. How right salons and anything like that where people consume alcohol. This was a place where you went and did this.
Yeah,
stuff,
I mean,
as we know,
our country. The only reason our country exists is because people wanted to drink some rum and to discuss
and to go
what
complain.
Was going on.
And
honestly, I mean, honestly,
exactly. Real talk. That's where the American Revolution was actually born.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Conceived in bars.
These were and the same thing goes on with the philosophes in France, with the salons and things like that. These
absolutely.
Are places where you went and consumed alcohol and debated philosophy.
So this idea that we don't get to engage in this kind of stuff, that, you know,
that it's a free
quote
for
unquote,
all vacation
up,
from any.
You know
sort
what?
Of.
Get better at your job, because I take personally, you know, I don't know, I maybe tooting my own horn, but I think I'm trying to just talk to my own experience. I take a lot of pride in being able to engage in these difficult subjects with patrons in a way that keeps things positive and keeps the air comfortable.
Absolutely.
And isn't, you know, making people feel unwelcome or that they're not in a place where they can be corrected or, you know, what that even on yeah
new.
That even is a powerful word to be using, or you know, maybe too directive of a word to be using. Get better at your job. Like, you can talk about these things. We're adults. Everyone in your bar is at least 21.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Like, and this is a place of employment, and this is a place where people go. And I think, too, it's a place if you go – and if you – look, if you go out to a bar and you want to go flirt, go flirt. If you want to go out to a bar and have a drink and be left alone, you should have that right, too.
Yeah. And we should be providing spaces for that, you know? I mean, your bar is, you know, my bar, Molly's bar, any bar, it doesn't exist for itself. We exist for our community. We're a part of our community. Your community will communicate to you what it wants it to be, right? And by virtue of things like a police force and laws that don't allow for sexual assault and so on and so forth, we exist in a community that says we don't want this. But when 50% of all violent crime involves alcohol, when something like 80% of sexual assault, or excuse me, drug facilitated sexual assault
is
alcohol.
Yep.
80%. You know, our community is telling us that they want us to stop this.
Mm-hmm.
And
something has to change.
It's our job to do that. You know, I don't go to work thinking about how I'm going to run this bar best for me today. How am I going to be a bartender in the service of Mark Shetler today? Damn that. Absolutely not. You check your needs at the door.
You
create the bar and the space that your patrons need, right? If that means that that patron needs a safe place to sit and think, you know, I had a guy in the bar last night who did that.
Or great. Read.
Or read. Or whatever. Read.
Yeah, and that's a nice
I read
thing.
In your bar all the
or
time.
A safe place to, you know, I don't know. The word that's coming to my head is probably... To meet other, like to flirt.
Socialize or flirt or whatever, right?
You can do that too.
Yeah.
But we're going to give you an environment where you can do that safely.
Safely. Now, Molly, let me come to you on this because you mentioned this during the last commercial break, before we take a break here in a second. And Marky, we were talking about this, all of us were talking about here during the break. You guys are in a unique vantage point to see this. Mm-hmm. And you told us a story
about
how...
literally built...
Yes, they are built exactly. So you were telling us a story during the break about how you noticed that one member of a party went missing.
Right.
And you can see that.
Absolutely. And I'm not sitting here saying, oh, there was a credible threat. Again, now I'm using Mark's, I borrowed Mark's scare quotes for that. But, you know, this is
I've
just.
I've seen that in lots of movies.
Yeah, right. This is just something that just even, you know, I'm doing about 8 other things trying to close a bar up. No one is any sort of immediate danger. We're not talking anything like that. But hey, you know what? I could tell by the way that girl was sort of sitting in her seat that she definitely had too much to drink. You know, it was the beginning of Mardi Gras season. Her friends are sitting there enjoying their meal, hanging out. And you know what? I think she's been gone just a little bit too long. Yeah,
6 women became 5.
And much longer than a bathroom visit, right?
And I said, you know what? Even if she is in the bathroom, something might have gone wrong. She might even just be sitting there taking a breather, putting some cold water on her face. But let me just make sure. So then I proceed to go do a whole sweep of pretty much our entire grounds, come back, pour them all some water and say, hey, guys, so are we missing one? Are we down one? And they say, oh, yeah, you know, we put her in a cab and she really wasn't feeling well. So we sent her home. She's on her way home right now.
And
I said, OK, awesome. Great. But the thing is that level of awareness.
These are the strategies that we are working to start training people on. We're going to get into that.
Thank you. Hey, man. It's my show. I'll talk about where I'm going to get it. No, I'm just giving you a hard time, man. No,
that segue had a bow tie on.
Yeah, do you want? You'll guest host for me when I'm out of town next time, man.
Oh, no,
friends. No. Friends, coming back to the Noel Drink Show. We are going to talk about some things that they're all working on, some really positive things, tools, strategies, skills, things we need to look for here with a serious issue. Friends, coming back to the Noel Drink Show and your host, Mark Shetler.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
When a cold chill begins to burn at your very soul, that's the sweet touch of love.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show here with your host, Brian Diaz. Thanks for being here today. We're chatting with Molly Bird and Mark Shetler, and we're talking a bit about sexual assault and sexual violence as it happens in bars and in the alcohol industry. And again, I will reiterate for the 85th time during this particular portion of the show that we're going to address this issue on a repeated basis. So don't think that we're going to get in whatever, you know, we're going to come back to lots of these things because this is really just the tip of the iceberg. But what we're going to get into now here in the last segment is some really exciting stuff that you all are up to, including, let's just go to the breaking news. I never have breaking news. I'm making a sound effect and everything. Molly, breaking news. Can you start by saying this just in?
This just in. Really breaking news. The two of us have been working on a couple projects and decided to actually officially organize. So we started what we are calling the Proof Positive Project.
Engaged in bar and restaurant sexual violence prevention, response, and education in the bar and restaurant industry.
Awesome.
So we you know, there's been a couple efforts here and there to do something about this, but it is a need identified.
Woefully under-addressed.
Absolutely, yeah. So we decided, you know, we will just do it our darn selves.
Well done, well said. real quick, you guys, because I think we've touched on this a little bit, but I think we can kind of agree that for all these reasons, or many of the reasons that we've laid out here today, this industry, or set of industries, if you will, is woefully behind a lot of other industries addressing this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we're frankly just flat out a few years behind a lot of these conversations. You know, if you jump online and do research on this stuff, most of the articles that you're going to read are from a few years ago when it was a de rigueur issue, granted, and you don't see a lot of stuff still written about it. And that's what is another conversation, perhaps.
Right. And I think that also, you know, when we talk about the products in our industry, you know,
Advertising,
and even you can look to wine labels, you can look to beer labels.
Beer commercials, they're the worst.
Right. When I was trying to talk to someone outside of the industry, I said, all right, so when was the last time you saw a, you know, pretty much a booze advertisement in any sense that didn't have a female or imply a female presence?
Or let's just even go here. I mean, I wasn't there for that conversation, but let's just say the last time you saw an ad that objectified the male body.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Last time you saw one that objectified a female body? I mean, how much media have you consumed today? Because it was probably in there somewhere.
You saw it 100 times already today. Right. Yeah, no doubt. Right.
You know, and it's tough. It's tough to be working in an industry where you're literally serving, you know, in my work history, serving a beer that has a name like Panty Dropper.
Right.
Right. Or even you know.
So what
stop name checking things.
So what we're trying to do, So what we're trying to do with the Proof Positive Project, and you know why we're able to make that announcement today, frankly, is because we have finally settled on a name, and we're incorporating and filing our nonprofit paperwork any day now.
Excellent.
And Mark and I sort of came together on this and started attending meetings for at the New Orleans Family Justice Center for SART, which is the Sexual Assault Response Team. And, you know, it was kind of great because he said, hey, will you come with me to this? And we went in and again, Brian, you'll appreciate it. It was maybe the most sheepish I've ever seen Mark Shetler ever. Like sitting in the back of the room, sort of looking at me, saying, "Is it okay if I can I raise my hand? Should I say something?" And I said, "Wow, this is really refreshing." But truly, you know,
I hope you didn't get used to it.
No, definitely not. However, like you know, we went in there feeling sort of like interlopers and saying, "Oh wow, these people are doing amazing work." You know, we're bartenders. We shouldn't even be here. And the response we got from that meeting and from every meeting we've had with them and from a conference we've attended and mostly everyone we've talked to since then has been, we are so glad you guys are here. We are so glad that you're participating in this conversation. And frankly, that you're lending what you know, where we're looking at them right. Saying, hey, you guys know so much more about this. And they say, well, we've got
resources that we can leverage as well. Right. Some of those are tangible.
Hold on, Mark, real quick. Yeah. Because you guys, I think, assuming the perception was that you guys are in a place where it is a front line of some of this stuff. This is where the rubber hits
absolutely.
The road, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, to that point, right? When I say leveraging resources amongst them are that proximity. To these front lines, right? But, you know, other than that, there's fundraising opportunity, possibilities that we have that other people don't have.
We, you said earlier, oh, can I jump in the soapbox for a minute? But again, even how we were talking about the history of bartending and of bars and what that means in a community, we work on a soapbox behind a bar. We have a very unique opportunity to intervene in something that our community has identified as a problem and that our country's like that we've identified is a major problem.
You know what? That's a really interesting point, Molly, that I don't want to let go. And we only have like about a minute and a half left, but that it almost creates a solution that maybe is then unique as to other places because you are in that vantage point. You
absolutely.
Do see that. You are where the rubber hits the road, whereas, and I don't want to use the term whistleblower because that has such a negative connotation, but you're in a position to actually intervene.
Absolutely, yeah.
To guide and correct behavior towards the community that we've all agreed that we want to be a part of.
Yeah,
So
you're hosting the show, Mark, go. This is important.
So
we talk about this.
We talked about SART a moment ago and fundraising resources that we have access to. So the other, you know, big announcement that we have on March 26th, in a few short weeks from now, we are helping to facilitate something that we're calling Tip Out Day. And it is a national day of charitable giving in bars and restaurants. We will be enlisting bars, bartenders, restaurants, what have you, to commit to donating a portion or all of their tips and or sales to their local sexual assault response prevention and education organizations. Locally in New Orleans, we intend to be working with SART. They have an all-day summit that they're putting together for April. And the fact of the matter is the political climate that these organizations live in right now, they might not have money in a year. So we are right now working with PPP and the Tip Out Day to raise that money for them.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to share all this on the NOLA Drinks Facebook page. It's all going to be on the website. Podcast will be out tomorrow. Friends, Mark, I didn't mean to cut you off, but... got to do it. So we're still learning how to host. Yeah, we're going to. You're doing a good job, friends. Come on back next week to the NOLA Drinks Show. And until then, cheers, y'all.